This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Ruth Hodgson.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now you mentioned in an earlier recording about your husband as an academic going to China and going to South America. You had several trips to South America and you joined him in those.
I did. His early trips I couldn't because my own children were still at school or at university, or I wasn't invited.
Yes, yeah.
And then he was a big draw card because of his research strengths for student. His interest was grassland, and although he was professor of agronomy, his real love became the way grass grows, how it's eaten, how different animals eat grass differently. Different crops.
Yeah.
If you're a scientist, you know. Life isn't
simple. And he was fascinated. Did you share his interest, or you kept it quite separate from you?
No, I was much more of an arts kind of person. But
yes.
He was brought up on the farm, and I was holidaying there, so I understood the basics of what he was doing.
So, I mean, did he share? Did he talk about it much with you?
He wasn't a great talker.
Okay.
But a like-minded scientist from New Zealand or Australia or Canada, from any of the, I hesitate to say colonies because I was shot down in flames on one occasion.
Other parts of the Commonwealth.
Other parts of the Commonwealth.
Yes.
But if they were visiting him at work, he would ring me and say, can I bring so-and-so home for tea?
Yeah.
And can so-and-so spend the night?
Yeah.
And that was lovely because I
you served
I could
them
get,
food and they talked about grass
and they
all
talked
evening.
About their work, but they included me. They made sure that I was not sitting in a corner twiddling my thumbs. Yeah, so I got to know them and I got to know the work. I loved it.
Did you have sabbaticals?
We never had sabbaticals, but he kept being invited to go to a conference or to go and teach.
Yeah.
And most of our travels became through the United Nations Development Fund, UNDP. What would the P stand for?
Development Programme.
Programme, yes.
Yeah.
So
they were placements for a while or just short trips?
They were short trips, three weeks or a month.
Okay, and that's not too short.
No.
Yeah.
Some of his postgraduate students, he became... In the end, he was teaching. He wasn't doing undergrad teaching at all. It was all postgrads and postgraduates.
Yeah.
And they would come with their families, be with us for two or three years. I looked after the wives, helped them with their English if they needed help. Enjoyed their babies if they had babies while they were here.
And a lot of these were they from... Canada, South America?
They were South American.
Okay.
The Chinese, the main bulk of Chinese, they came as a block of 10 to learn how to restore their destroyed land how to help it recover and how to grow whatever could grow.
Okay.
Their rice lands were in good order, but their grassland was devastated, overgrazed to extinction.
So your husband went over there, assessed it, and then could come back?
To have a look at the situation with another member of staff who was Chinese, and he was Malaysian Chinese.
Alex Chu.
They went together.
Yeah.
And Alex was an enormous help in setting up this. Yeah. So 10 students came, and John and two of his colleagues helped look after them.
Yeah,
and we took them around New Zealand, and because of that, John and Alex went the first time, And when he came back, John said it wasn't suitable for me.
Yes, yeah.
Conditions were so bad.
Yeah. If you're used to that sort of mud floors in houses and things like that.
Oh, it was worse than that. It was worse than that, yes.
Okay.
It was lack of sanitation, total lack of, and not daring to touch anything unless it, everything...
Yeah. Had to be cleaned.
And they were there working, they couldn't look after us as well as work. But the second time Alex arranged that John's other colleague and his wife, we could go as two couples because we'd been looking after these people. Yeah. It was just the students that. From China.
So they sort of hosted you.
And they would host us. Okay. They would...
And they knew what you'd be expecting.
They would make sure we had an interpreter. Because you arrive in China and there's no English whatsoever.
Yeah.
Just symbols everywhere. And they would make sure that we knew what we were about.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, that's good.
The interesting thing for me, because of my wartime experiences and having my grandparents live in a poorer part of town, I quite understood that plumbing wasn't, ideal.
Yes, yeah.
But my Chinese colleague complained about the plumbing bitterly the whole time we were there. In fact, as we approached the holes in the road.
Yes. Yeah, there's things that we take for granted that even if they weren't there, you can still have a very satisfying life. They're not necessities. They're sort of things that we take for granted. But South America. What were you doing there then?
There, it was John's postgraduate students here with United Nations, again, scholarships.
Mm.
And all of them were men in their 30s. One or two women who, because of the political situation in South America, had been able to do postgraduate study.
Because of the political situation there? They were
in South America
appropriately in with the government? Is that what you mean?
No, because in many of those governments, we've all heard about it. They rounded up their intelligentsia and murdered them.
Oh, so they needed more, so they were sending people.
Well, they should reach the stage where they realised, as they were developing, that the men who became John's students were already directors of research institutes but had no postgraduate certificates, and to develop.
Yes, they needed it.
They needed it. So they were coming to do their PhDs.
Yeah, okay.
And bringing their wives and children, and absolutely wonderful people. John had one of these students while we still lived in Scotland, and I had started to learn very basic Spanish.
Yeah.
Because the wife came with no English.
Yeah.
And I wanted to help and couldn't.
Yes.
And so... when we came to New Zealand, I immediately went to night school. No, I had the opportunity to go to high school in Scotland with the children and learn Spanish. 2 years, school certificate, and then university entrance.
So was that because you knew this might arise or just general interest in Spanish?
I just general interest. I loved French at school.
Yeah.
There was the opportunity, so I took it.
Mm. Mm. Yeah.
So I was learning to teach yoga and learning to read and speak Spanish. It was my...
at the same time.
As the children, went to school.
Yeah.
So
where did you go to in South America?
Yeah. We had students from Chile.
Yes. What was the politics at that time? What was the politics in
Chile? It was always dodgy. Yeah. But John, as his first job at the... it was the Grassland Research Institute in England... Yeah. South of England, which was the equivalent of our DSIR Grasslands. One of his friends there was a student from Chile doing his PhD through Reading University. So we got to know them as a family.
So
that was our in to Chile.
Okay.
So some of our visits to Chile were because Claudio with the government, Chilean government, had organised a Millennium Fund at the Millennium to give scholarships to different sciences.
Okay.
And they needed adjudicators for the people who applied.
Okay.
And John went, and Claudia asked John if he would go and do the, adjudicate the agricultural.
Yeah. Okay.
And so off we went. And by that time, you know, my children were all away and gone, and I could go. Mm. And I had enough Spanish to cope.
Yeah. And Chile was very stable by then, or?
As stable as it could be.
Yeah.
And the South American countries, you still have to be extremely careful because they themselves, the wives, if they're going into town, they wear their oldest clothes, they take all their jewellery off.
Yeah, because they can just get robbed.
So that's one kind of safety.
Yeah, when I was growing up, you have to get dressed, wear your smart clothes to go into town.
Yes, and they did the opposite. So that was Chile, and John had a student from halfway down Chile.
How did you find the standard of living there compared to New Zealand?
Oh, and either incredibly rich or incredibly poor.
Yeah.
But sort of living alongside each other.
Yeah. And the profession, the people you were,
They lived in better conditions than we did.
Yes.
But a lot of that was family money.
Okay.
You know, their parents had done extremely well.
So for them to get the education they needed.
Selling beef to England.
Yes.
During the war.
Yeah.
Yes. Do you remember Fray Bentos, corned beef?
Yes, oh yes.
Yes, well, the next country up was Uruguay.
Yes.
And we had two or three students from Uruguay, and we actually drove past the original Fray Bentos factory. Yeah. And I said, oh, yes.
Yeah. I remember Argentinian beef getting into the English market some years later.
We drove past and we visited a couple of estates in Argentina with more wealth than three of our Queen Elizabeths put together. But they had fallen on hard times.
Yeah. Mm. But yeah, some of those were massive because the landholding, a few people with massive landholdings.
Yes, and people could sort of go and just take over a huge parcel of land. It was empty.
Yeah.
Mm. I had one trip to, we had one trip to Tierra del Fuego, and there's a bit of Tierra del Fuego.
Oh, you've got, it looks a bit like clay, but lots of shells in there.
Fossilised sand.
Fossilised sand and a whole load of, what's it, trumpet shells, aren't they?
I'm not sure, but we were having coffee with the ranch owner.
Yes.
Before they headed off to look at his situation and for John to give advice. And he just went out and I could see him grovelling around on his drive outside, you know, a long drive, and he came back with this as a present for me. And it's it's a fossil from Tierra del Fuego. So,
yes. I thought, so you would have gone in summer or winter or various times?
That time, Tierra del Fuego was summer, and it was supposed to be maximum 17. And they were having a heat wave.
Yeah.
So it was it was up to 26.
So you were fairly far down the country then.
Oh, that's the end.
Right. I know. So you were actually down there.
We went across the channel, across the Beagle Channel to Tierra del Fuego itself.
Okay.
But they have, it's the southern tip of the Andes, and it's very touristy.
For which tourists? Lots of Americans, you mean? Or
All over the world, really. Yeah. Okay. And they could fly. They could fly down to their main tourist city was on the Argentinian side because Argentina joins Chile.
Yes.
It may come to me. And they could fly down and then go by cruise ship back up to Buenos Aires, or they could do it the other way. They could.
Yeah.
So, but we were there in this tremendous heat, which suddenly arrived,
yes,
and people were paddling and swimming in the sea, which they'd never done.
Yes.
And yeah, the horse trekker, the pony trekkers were coming off the mountains, dressed for winter.
Yes.
With sunburnt and sweat pouring off them. Oh, yes, right. That was quite interesting. Yeah. That was the start of us having, you know, real change in climate.
Yes, So how often would you be going over to...
Well, we ended up going almost every year. Because John had students from Chile, from Uruguay, from Argentina, from the southern part of Brazil.
Yeah,
and then he was known... he wrote textbooks to cover his field. He was an amazing man, my husband, actually. He was very quiet, very reserved, very humble. And he became a fellow of the Royal Society.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Very good.
Just for the strength of his research. But he had written the textbooks that they were using in their universities.
Yeah.
And it was a real treat for them to meet, you know, the author of...
So did he do much collaborative research then? I suppose if he's supervising PhDs, then...
He arranged, because they're United Nations scholarships were for 2 years, and he arranged that they could come for a year to establish themselves and start their research, and then go back and work back in their own jobs, but continue the research.
Yes. Yeah.
But we had to go, that was the reason, to make sure that they were doing what they were supposed to be doing, and to meet their directors, and then that became a pattern for John's particular postgraduate students, that they would come and do these PhDs with the year in the middle, off we went. And because I spoke enough Spanish to when John was off doing his thing with the grasslands. I could wander the streets.
So what were you doing with your time there?
I was trying to talk to people. I was... it wasn't a holiday as such, but I was exploring and trying to improve
Did
my Spanish.
Did you have particular interest, the history there, or photographing places, or looking at the plants?
I liked photographing. They had beautiful, beautiful buildings and wrought ironwork.
Quite old, some of them, would they be? From the early days of European settlement in South America, or...?
Yes, I wouldn't like to put a date, but Victorian times, certainly. And sugar, of course.
Yes.
You know, most of Britain's real fancy historic buildings were built on sugar.
Yeah.
I didn't know that until a few years ago.
Because
we never had a hint of slavery in England.
Apart
from having tried to stop it.
Well, some came from the industry and the coal mining.
I was... And I actually took crochet. In Chile, I took myself into a little shop and with my very basic Spanish, bought myself a pattern book and some thread and a hook. Which meant that in my bag with me, I had... something to do if I was sitting waiting for John. They have not much sense of time in Latin America. So if they say 7, it could mean 10 or 11 or the next day.
Now, this is an issue of eating, because I had, say, Spain and Italy, probably you have your evening meal very late at night. Was it a similar pattern?
Yes, absolutely. Very Spanish.
So what sort of time scale? How would the day go?
They would come... They made sure I was looked after. Actually, towards the end, I was staying with people who I'd been teaching English to here. The men went off and did their thing, or they had delegated their relatives to look after me while I was there.
I was going to say, if you're staying with your ex pupils, you wouldn't have been too good for your Spanish, because they'd want to keep practicing their English.
Well, they talked to me in their bad English, and I spoke to them in my bad Spanish. It worked very well. It worked very well.
Yeah.
No, we were really good friends.
Okay, so you get a normal day there. You get up at 7, 8 o'clock in the morning?
Oh, sometimes earlier. In spite of that really late bedtime, they were, because they had...
So you have a siesta in the
morning? They always had a siesta in the afternoon.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Even when, even in places where it was fairly cool?
Yes, yes. It was just the custom all the way through the Spanish-speaking.
So, I'm just thinking, you would do something like, say, you get up at 6 then? You'd have breakfast.
Mm-hmm. Wait for them to come and collect John.
Yeah.
And hopefully somebody would collect me. If not,
yeah.
I first of all had to ask if where we were was safe for me on my own.
Yes.
And if it was, I could head off.
Yeah.
And just explore. And there were periods of boredom, but it was worth it.
Yeah, you take a pile of books with you.
yes. Okay. And I always had a Spanish grammar in my handbag.
So you'd be up about 6, you'd be active until about 12, would it be?
They would usually come and find me at lunchtime, which might be about 2.
Okay.
And I would eat with them.
So when do you have a siesta?
Till about 4 or 5.
Oh, okay, so you eat at 2... So the hottest time is sort of mid to late afternoon?
Yes, just as it is with us in midsummer.
Okay.
And then they would head off again.
So the siesta would be about an hour, hour and a half of just having a nap? Or
yes. I remember staying with a very nice friend. They were here last year, actually, for 6 months, and I spent a lot of time with Nana. And she reminded me of my mother, actually. But we went to stay with her parents, who had a big ranch on the border between Brazil and Uruguay. Mm. And Mum and Dad didn't speak any English.
Mm.
But Dad had a huge sense of humour, and he was always laughing at something. And everybody around him was being happy. And Mum would grab my arm after lunch. We're there for 2 or 3 days and haul me off to a bedroom somewhere in the house and put me to bed, really, as though I was a child, and close the curtains. And
time for your siesta.
She couldn't tell me.
Did you find it difficult adjusting to that?
No, I go with the flow. I go with the flow. Yeah. I'm very easygoing. But on one occasion, one of John's Brazilian students was with us, Beatrice and I were the guests.
Yes.
And we went to the same place, and we were both put to bed in separate bedrooms. And I can't sleep during the afternoon like that, and I got bored, and I didn't know when I was going to be allowed up.
Yeah.
And I sort of tiptoed out of the room and tiptoed along the corridor and met my Brazilian friend coming the opposite way. She spoke good English and she said, "What are we supposed to do?"
Oh, so in Brazil they didn't do that.
Yes, they did, but she was in Uruguay, and she didn't know.
Oh, okay.
She didn't know when she should get up and what we should do either. So and we just met some incredibly lovely and wonderful people.
Yeah.
On one occasion, John and I were asked to... John had organised a memoranda of understanding between Massey and the universities.
Yeah.
James McCaw, the Vice-Chancellor, had to go to sign the documents.
Yes.
So John and I went to... John to look after James and myself to look after his wife.
Yes. Very good.
That was an interesting experience. I'd been used to doing my own thing, and she was very determined to get on with things, and she was up and off before I was.
I wanted to see as much as possible in
the
time.
Well, yes, for obvious reasons.
Yes.
But,
So general impressions of the countries then?
Huge.
Yeah.
They are massively Catholic.
Yes.
Roman Catholic. They are developing. Part of their populations live in awful poverty and scramble around on the rubbish dumps, just as you see in India.
Yeah.
And
culturally, then, was it that there's...
Very family-orientated.
Very strong Spanish influence, or was
a very strong Italian especially in Argentina.
Yes.
And even although they were speaking Spanish, there was a hint of Portuguese.
Yes, okay. What about German?
Yes, Germans there. And in Chile, one part of Chile, we were astonished because at lunchtime we were taken to the German club to eat. And the walls were covered with swastikas, and I thought it was quite a strange. But the Jews fled, wherever they could flee, and there were strong Jewish communities. Yeah. And then after the war, the Nazis fled.
Yes,
and somehow or other.
Well, they could speak the same language.
They spoke the same language. They all. Yes, one of the things that was interesting was that the children, many of them, went to either the English school or the French school or the German school.
Okay.
And, you know, and were taught in whichever language.
Yeah.
Even primary age children.
Yes, yeah.
Which was intriguing.
Well, probably a different standard as well, do you think, compared to the local schools?
Difficult to
There's
tell.
There's big focus on international schools for expatriates quite often.
They were just doing their own thing.
Yeah. Any specific things stood out about the food? Nothing but meat, was it? Or
oh, huge barbecues. You know, entire beasts on a great big old bed frame in the fields.
Yeah.
And they threw salt water at it all through the day as it was barbecuing through, and it was absolutely delicious. Breakfasts were lovely. They were like continental French-style breakfasts. If we stopped at a lorry stop, because in Brazil we were travelling huge distances to meet people, see farms, etc., we would stop at a lorry stop, which in, you know, I was used to being a bit rough and ready and all the rest of it. And the waiters were all in, you know, with bow tie and the serviette over their arm. And it was very French style. And
And so the lorry drivers were smartly dressed as well?
No, they were just getting out of their lorries. And a lot of very French style, the food. And in parts of China it was too. And when we got to the upper echelons, it was Chinese style, but it was served in a very French way.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.